Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. For 20 years, Purdue Pharma has been at the center of our national conversation about opioid addiction. Founded and controlled by the Sackler family, the pharmaceutical giant's flagship product, OxyContin, is the focus of hundreds of lawsuits in dozens of states. It's taken a personal toll, as renowned photographer Nan Golden told WBUR.
Having been addicted to OxyContin, I have a personal vendetta against the Sacklers because I know how hard they worked to get this drug out there, how hard they sold it like any good drug dealers.
And as mentioned, there are more than 35 states suing Purdue Pharma. The latest suit comes from Massachusetts, where the state's attorney general alleges, through emails and company documents, that members of the Sackler family personally and directly pushed sales reps to mislead doctors, steer patients to higher dosages, and pocket profits in the billions of dollars. Now, Purdue Pharma calls the complaint a baseless, quote, vilification of the Sacklers. But this hour on Point, we'll take a closer look at what's alleged and revealed in the latest lawsuit against Purdue Pharma, the Sackler family, and allegations that they fueled America's opioid crisis. And you can join us. Have you been affected by the opioid crisis? Did you get hooked on them through taking OxyContin? Should Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family be held accountable, and how? Or is this simply one particularly egregious example of behavior that's common across the U.S. pharmaceutical industry? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Now, a little later this hour, we will hear directly from Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey. She'll be in the second half of today's show. But let's start first with two reporters who've covered the Purdue story. Joining us in the studio is Christine Wilmson. She's senior editor and reporter who leads WBUR's investigative unit, and she's been closely following and reporting this story. And I should note that our home station, WBUR, is one of the media outlets that sued Purdue Pharma and along with several other outlets to force the release of previously redacted information in Massachusetts Superior Court regarding the filing that was put forth by the state's attorney general. So, Christine Wilmson, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna.
It's great to have you. Okay, so also with us from Washington is Barry Meyer, a former New York Times reporter who's covered Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family since 2001. We've got links to his latest pieces at onpointradio.org. He's also author of the book Painkiller, An Empire of Deceit and the Origin of America's Opioid Epidemic. Barry Meyer, it's good to talk with you again.
Thank you, Meghna, though your introduction makes me feel very old, the 20-year part.
Or let's just say persistent in following a very important story in American history and in the lives of millions of Americans. So Christine, let me first start with you here, because as of late last week, we finally obtained a fully unredacted copy of this complaint that was filed by the Massachusetts Attorney General against Purdue Pharma and individual members of the Sackler family. So all of it's there in its multi-hundred pages. What are some of the most striking things we now know about what Massachusetts is alleging individual members of the Sackler family are said to have done or contributed to regarding the opioid epidemic?
The lawsuit really illuminates details of each particular Sackler family, how they were involved and how they made decisions. There's at least, I think, 17 current and former executives, as well as the Sacklers, that are named in this suit. And what the suit alleges is that each family member was intimately involved in the decision. Some were board members. Some played active roles in making sure they developed plans to target the vulnerable, to increase the strength of OxyContin, as well as to bribe even doctors to prescribe even more of OxyContin. One of the biggest people mentioned in this document is Richard Sackler. He is the former chairman and CEO of Purdue Pharma. the documents show how obsessed he was with sales, how much he couldn't let go of determining how much each sales rep was making. So repeatedly, he would get weekly reports on what doctors were the top sellers, what sales reps were doing. In fact, he didn't think that people were making enough money that he even went out with sales reps and went door to door, encouraging them to sell even more of the OxyContin.
Right. And the depth of his alleged involvement here, and I'm going to say alleged over and over again because this is information out of a complaint from the Massachusetts Attorney General. I mean, there's parts of it, as you're mentioning, that allege that he even wanted to go out on sales visits to be sure that or at least get a sense of, about whether or not Purdue Pharma sales reps were pushing those higher doses of OxyContin in satisfactory ways.
Yeah, he was really wanting to be involved. And I think there was some nervousness on the part of other people internally at Purdue Pharma, like, wait a second, we got to be careful with what he's going to say. But ultimately, he was constantly pressuring the sales reps divisions, including Boston's. He felt like people weren't making the cut. And some of his regional sales directors even threatened to start firing some of these sales reps because they weren't making the cut as far as how many prescriptions were being written by doctors.
Yeah, okay, so Barry Meyer, you have been following this story for years. Is there anything new that stands out to you in terms of what the Massachusetts Attorney General is alleging in her complaint?
Yes, there are a couple of things that are striking, but let me just put them into context, and that is that we know a lot about what Purdue is doing. We should have known more about what Purdue and the Sacklers were doing. Unfortunately, a lot of the previous litigation was settled. The documents were sealed. I was fortunate enough to get a voluminous report that the Justice Department had done back in 2006 when they were about to prosecute top executives of Purdue for felonies. And what those documents show is that the Sacklers were aware, or allegedly aware, that this drug was being abused. It was being abused much earlier than the company had reported. They had gotten field reports from sales reps. Purdue, through the years, has gone to great lengths to create what apparently now is a myth, that the Sacklers were not involved with this company, that they were some benevolent people who took the money from legitimate drug sales and bestowed it on museums and medical schools and so forth.
Right. I mean, at one point in time, Purdue even put out a statement saying that the Sacklers held, quote, no management positions.
Right. Totally, apparently untrue, like many statements Purdue has made over the years. In fact, as Christine was saying, they were definitely involved. They were deeply involved. They were micromanaging the operations. They were divvying up the profits. So, you know, this wall that Purdue had spent tens of millions on to create, this public relations mirage, is starting to fall apart. And we're now starting to glimpse the truth.
Yeah, no. So, Christine, there's so many parts here that we could spend quite a bit of time talking about. I just want to highlight another one. So, for example, the Massachusetts complaint alleges that around 2007, the Sacklers – and 2007 is a critical date here, and we'll talk a little bit more about why that is – but that the Sacklers wanted to separate themselves from the mounting legal risks that came with their business selling OxyContin. And the complaint suggests that there are emails that say that they wanted to hire, quote, a loyal CEO or perhaps even sell the company. And if they couldn't sell the company, begin taking profits out and paying the family directly. Now, from 2007 till roughly 2018, the complaint says it outlines a figure, a number, about how much in payouts of Purdue profits went to the Sackler family. What's that total number, the total dollars? You remember?
Yeah, it's pretty astonishing. $4 billion with a B. Each quarter, they would get tens of millions of dollars, and it totals up to $4 billion.
And these are members of the board, right? They're controlling members of the board making the decision to draw the profits out and pay the family directly.
Well, and keep in mind, repeatedly, they said it still wasn't enough. There was all this pressure that they weren't meeting expectations, some of the sales reps. And so they wanted even more than that and devised a couple other plans to make sure that they increased their sales.
Wow. You know, I should say clearly that we did reach out to Purdue Pharma and representatives of the Sackler family and asked them to join us this hour. They declined. They pointed us back to a statement that they released on January 31st, so just last week. And Barry Meyer, in that statement, Purdue Pharma says Massachusetts seeks to publicly vilify Purdue, its executives, employees and directors, while unfairly undermining the important work we have taken to address the opioid addiction crisis by taking out of context snippets from tens of millions of documents and grossly distorting their meaning. The complaint is riddled with demonstrably inaccurate allegations. Does Purdue have a point there? I mean, we're talking about a major company whose communications over many years does amount to tens of millions of documents. They're saying that Maura Healey, the Massachusetts Attorney General, is crafting a fiction that serves her needs. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, it's the job of lawyers on both sides to craft fictions. And Purdue is certainly no stranger to the crafting of fictions. It has the best lawyers in the country to craft such fictions. If Purdue truly believes that its story is being misrepresented, it's within its right to disclose any documents it wants, to disclose all the documents it wants. If the Sacklers believe that they're being vilified or they're being mischaracterized, let them step forward. Let them tell their story. I have covered this story for 20 years, and not once during that entire time has any member of the Sackler family involved with the operation of Purdue Pharma spoken publicly, explained what they're doing, apologized if they felt there was a need to apologize for what they're doing, but put what they're doing into some sort of public context. They have not said a word.
Well, in fact, Christine, in the complaint, it's alleged that after 2007, Richard Sackler, as you mentioned, who was president of Purdue Pharma, that he continued, in fact, to send out guidance about key messages that Purdue sales reps should put out, that it's not addiction, that it's abuse and about personal responsibility. So for a long time, still heaping the effects of the opioid crisis on the people suffering directly. That was his direct guidance.
Yeah, there was kind of this campaign or tactic to label people as addicts and criminals versus people that had serious medical problems to allegedly disassociate the company and the drug from the people, if that makes sense. But there's just some numbers that are startling that you have to listen to or read in this complaint. For example, in Massachusetts in the last 11 years, sales reps visited physicians 150,000 times.
Wow. Well, we'll hear more of those numbers when we come back. We're talking about what's revealed in the fully unredacted complaint that the Massachusetts Attorney General has filed against Purdue Pharma. It's one of many around the country. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about what's been revealed in the fully unredacted complaint that's been filed by the Massachusetts Attorney General against OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma and individual members of the family that founded and owns the company, the Sackler family. I'm joined today by Barry Meyer. He's a former New York Times reporter who's covered Purdue Pharma since 2001. He's also author of Painkiller, An Empire of Deceit and the Origin of America's Opioid Epidemic. Christine Wilmson also joins us. She's senior investigative editor and reporter here at our home station of WBUR. And a little bit later this hour, we're expecting the Massachusetts Attorney General to join us directly. And I want to once again mention that we did invite Purdue Pharma to join us as well, and they declined. So, Christine, pick up on the thought that you were sharing with us before the break here, that there are some very revealing numbers about the breadth and the extent to which Purdue Pharma made direct contact with physicians in Massachusetts. And I presume that it was a pattern that they also used elsewhere in other states here. Tell us more about those numbers and why are they significant?
Well, a lot of times they develop these programs or tactics to increase sales. So one of them was called Region Zero. And Region Zero was Purdue Pharma started seeing some of their sales slipping a bit, not as much as they wanted. So they created this project or Region Zero in which they focused on the highest paying doctors, the ones that were giving them the most prescriptions. And they doubled down with them. So sales reps increased their visits to the doctors that already potentially were abusing the drug as far as over-prescribing it. So that was one of the tactics, and that really paid off for them.
Well, so regarding Region Zero, the complaint alleges that, that Purdue Pharma, no one had more information than Purdue Pharma itself about who may be over-prescribing OxyContin, right? And there's an example here. They have, in 2009, the complaint alleges that a Purdue sales manager had emailed the then CEO that a certain doctor might have been running what amounted to, quote, an organized drug ring, a pill mill, but that the company didn't report the information to the DEA or state authorities for more than 2 years until after that doctor had been arrested?
Yeah, there's several examples like that in the complaint. There's also one where a sales rep reports that he or she believes that this physician might be overprescribing because there was lawn chairs around the street corner with people in line getting the OxyContin. But a lot of times these warnings were never reported, which they're required by law. They were never reported. And so these doctors kept prescribing, and the complaint alleges some of those prescriptions led to the death of people in Massachusetts.
Yeah, so Barry Meyer, in terms of the aggressiveness that Purdue Pharma sales reps visited doctors here, I'm seeing parts of the report saying that, for example, a Purdue sales rep visited a particular doctor in Massachusetts more than 600 times. The rep was in his office almost every workday. They'd meet on Monday to discuss patients who would be coming in that day. And then on Tuesday, the sales rep would go back to confirm that the doctor had put those patients on Purdue opioids.
This story, the aggressive marketing of OxyContin, the aggressive marketing of OxyContin to doctors who were overprescribers or running pill mills, goes back to the early 2000s. It was going on. I took trips to South Carolina, Georgia. There were pill mills operating there. There were doctors there that were being serviced by Purdue Pharma representatives who subsequently went to prison. I think it's instructive to know that this system of knowing what doctors prescribed, it's called the IMS system, where prescription information is captured, was developed by Arthur Sackler, one of the three Sackler brothers who founded Purdue Frederick, the forerunner to Purdue Pharma. So they were masters at this. They were master drug marketers, master drug advertisers. And throughout the years, they've been aware or become aware that that doctors were overprescribing, that doctors were running pill mills, that some of these drugs were ending up on the street. And the fact, the allegation that this was continuing 15, 18 years after it began is mind-boggling to me, that they did not, some people in that company did not say, this is a legitimate drug. We want patients to get this. We don't want to make bad money from this drug. That someone there just didn't put their foot down and stop it.
Okay. So let me dig into that a little bit with you, Barry, here for a second, because what I really want to know is what's alleged that Purdue Pharma, engaged in regarding their sales of OxyContin, is that demonstrably different, though, than common practice overall in the pharmaceutical industry? Is the key difference here is that they were selling effectively and aggressively an addictive drug? Because I'm just thinking, like, just the other day, I was in a Massachusetts hospital for a doctor's appointment, and on the door of next door to my doctor's office was a sign that says, handwritten, said, "We are not seeing any pharma reps today." I mean, they are in hospitals everywhere across the country all the time.
Well, that was certainly the case until recently. I mean, there's been sort of a casting out of pharma reps in recent years from pharmacies, from doctor's office. Kind of pay-for-play arrangements are starting to die out. But I think what makes The story of OxyContin unique, and certainly what I tried to sketch out in the book, is that, you know, this was the most aggressive advertising campaign ever undertaken by the drug industry for a highly addictive drug. They use the same marketing advertising techniques that you would use for a blood pressure medicine to promote a drug that patients could become addicted to. And that was a startling thing when they began back in the mid-1990s. That had never been done before. And let's bear in mind that the first few billions of dollars that this company made from OxyContin that ended up presumably in the pockets of the Sacklers was all built on a lie. They lied to doctors. They lied to patients. They lied to regulators. They claimed that, you know, there was like zero chance of people becoming addicted, patients becoming addicted to OxyContin.
Well, and the federal government, though, came after them in 2007 for that lie, right? I mean, that's why 2007 is a really important year in this conversation, because that was the same year that Purdue settled with the federal government for, what, more than $630 million about exactly this issue and promised to change its business practice.
Yes, and that's what makes this current complaint so fascinating, because we know that they admitted lying. We know from the secret documents that I got that the government believed that people within the company knew that the drug was being abused early on. But now we fast forward to, a decade later, and the Massachusetts Attorney General, and I'm going to presume other states, are going to argue that this behavior continued. Mm-hmm. It may have, altered slightly, but the basic drive to get this drug out there. I mean, one of the shocking things in this complaint to me is the drive to prescribe, get doctors to prescribe this drug at the highest possible dosage, which we know is the dosage that has the highest risk for patients of side effects, including addiction.
Mm. Well, Barry and Christine, stand by here for just a second, because I want to get at least one call in here. This is obviously the opioid epidemic has touched so many people across the entire nation. So let's just hear briefly from Bob, who's calling from Warren, Michigan. Bob, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I wanted to make a comment about how the opioid epidemic has affected me personally and my family. My mother passed away 2 years ago. She had double knee replacement, and a few years later, she had a major back surgery. She was prescribed OxyContin for her pain while in the hospital. Now, this is a 72-year-old woman, not a criminal, not a drug addict. She did become addicted to OxyContin. Her pain management doctor ended up prescribing her 120 tablets a month, and she took every one of them every month. 2 years ago, she fell and hit her head, suffered a traumatic brain injury, and about 8 weeks later, passed away from falling and hitting her head. Hmm. I attribute it 100% to her addiction. She did become addicted. She was not herself when she was on the pills. I could tell there was a difference in her mood. Almost like she was high, even at that age. And when she was not on her pills, you could see how she would become more agitated, more angry, until she took her pill, and then her mood changed and she got better again.
So
the pharmacy company is 100% responsible for this opioid addiction in America, and they need to be stopped.
Well, Bob, thank you for your call, and I'm so sorry to hear about what happened to your mother, but thank you for sharing your story. Christine and Barry, hang on here for just a second, because joining us now in the studio is Maura Healey. She is the Attorney General for the state of Massachusetts, and as we've been discussing, on behalf of Massachusetts, Maura Healey recently filed this complaint against Purdue Pharma. And again, to put it in context, I should say there are more than 35 states who have been filing complaints against Purdue Pharma as well, but Maura Healey joins us now in the studio. Attorney General Healey, it's good to talk with you.
Great to be with you, Meghna.
So first of all, tell me, I just want to get your immediate reaction to Purdue's statement that they put out after this fully unredacted complaint was released last week. And I read a little bit of it before, but I want to read it back to you. Purdue says that you are seeking to publicly vilify Purdue, its executives, employees, and directors, while unfairly undermining the important work they've undertaken to address opioid addiction. And then they say, you have taken out-of-context snippets from tens of millions of documents and grossly distorted their meaning to create what they call fiction in terms of Purdue's and the Sacklers' practices regarding selling OxyContin. What's your response to that?
Well, the complaint that we filed, and I really credit the lawyers in our office and the team for the extensive investigation that they did, which included review of millions of pages of Purdue documents and emails. So what's alleged in our complaint basically reflects much of what is contained in Purdue's own documents. To the extent they claim it's taken out of context, we welcome them, as Barry said earlier, to produce all the documents that we continue to seek. We've had to go to court to actually get them to produce documents, so we welcome that. Interestingly, I don't hear a denial in that statement. I hear complaints about the context in which we are making our allegations. Obviously, these are allegations. We will proceed with this work in the court. However, I just want folks to know that, you know, when I was running for attorney general back in 2013, the issue that was at the top of mind for so many people here in our state, parents, sons and daughters, grandparents, was the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. And while this is a company that you might have thought would have learned a lesson back in 2007 when they were the subject of criminal prosecution and indeed consent judgments by the U.S. Department of Justice and states, what we uncovered in our investigation reflects activity post-2007 that continued for many years, that reflects an effort to get as many people on opioids as possible at as high a dose as possible for as long as possible. And I credit the reporting that both Christine and Barry have done to date on this issue.
Well, I suppose Purdue's denial, or as much of a denial as we've been able to get from them so far, comes in the form of they pointed us to the fact that they say that Purdue's medications represent 2%, less than 2% of overall opioid prescriptions in America. And that if you took every Purdue pill out of circulation, you'd still have 98% of those other opioid prescriptions out there. So that, you know, given that, they hold no liability for the opioid addiction crisis.
Well, let me be clear. First of all, our office is continuing to investigate many other manufacturers and distributors in this space. That will continue. But just to zoom out for a minute, Purdue Pharma was the company that launched OxyContin in 1996. And for years, the company and its executives misled the public about the addictive nature of its drug. They were the first to market, and they were the ones who claimed at one point that fewer than 1% of patients would ever become addicted. And for years, this was a company that worked the halls of Congress, state legislatures, and elsewhere, and certainly any number of pharmacists and doctors' offices to engage in aggressive marketing and sales. And what Purdue's own documents show is the extent of deception and deceit. Bob, he lost his mom in Michigan, okay? One of the things that we tell and recount in our complaint, we actually point to specific Purdue documents that talked about the specific marketing and targeting of an elderly, right, for arthritis, for example, precisely in part because this was a group of patients where Medicare could foot the bill. Yeah. They had similar strategies, we allege, and based on our investigation, that showed the targeting of veterans because they had access to payment streams for that. And they also targeted what they described to be, quote, opioid naive prescribers who could be subject to and particularly vulnerable to their marketing ploys.
Attorney General Healy, let me just ask you another quick question of many that we could ask. But I want to get to, you know, the specific assertion that you're making in your complaint here is that, you know, pharmaceutical companies target groups of patients all the time who they think are the, you know, who may benefit the most from the drugs that they're offering. But you're alleging, though, that they're targeting these patients and trying to sell them a drug that they knew could cause opioid addiction here. I'm just wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about what you found that led you to that conclusion, because a lot of what I read is, yes, in the complaint, is aggressive sales tactics for sure. But tell me more about how you go from that to saying they're aggressively selling something that they knowingly knew was dangerous for people.
Well, I really encourage people to take a look at our complaint. It is long, but I think it lays out the whole story here, or at least some of the story. Obviously, we're going to continue our investigation, and there is absolutely more that will come to light. But to your question, Meghna, sure, companies are allowed to market their products, to sell their products, and in fact, to try to sell as much of their product as possible. What you cannot do is lie and mislead and deceive. That's exactly what Purdue continued to do. Its executives and board directed and oversaw and controlled, even in the face of information that their drugs were harming people. And instead of owning some of this, they actually set about instructing their sales force to get out there and try to market in other ways and continue to deceive and mislead doctors and others about what was happening. If you look at the allegations, you'll see that there are sometimes people within the company who are attempting to blow the whistle on the behavior and say, wait, we've got a doctor who's prescribing in inordinate amounts, or we've got real concerns about what's happening out there. And the response by Richard Sackler and others was to ignore that and continue with the conduct, which was, again, aimed at getting as many people hooked at as high a dose as possible for as long as possible.
Well, Attorney General Maura Healey, stand by here for just a second. Christine Wilmson and Barry Meyer, hang on as well. We are talking in depth about what's been revealed in the fully unredacted complaint filed by the Massachusetts Attorney General against Purdue Pharma and individual members of the Sackler family. And again, it's one of more than 35 states that are suing Purdue Pharma, so we want to hear from you. We'll be back with a lot more. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about Purdue Pharma, the Sackler family that owns Purdue Pharma, and what its role is, what their role is allegedly in spreading OxyContin around the United States and the opioid addiction crisis. And we're talking about that because just at the end of last week, we obtained a fully unredacted version of a major complaint that was filed by the Massachusetts Attorney General against Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family. And again, for broader context, it's one of at least 35 states that is suing Purdue Pharma for its sales tactics around OxyContin. I'm joined this hour by Christine Wilmson. She's senior investigative editor and reporter here at WBUR. Barry Meyer is also with us. He's author of Painkiller, An Empire of Deceit and the Origin of America's Opioid Epidemic. And Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey is also with us this hour as well. And let me just go to a quick call here. Let's go to Will, who's calling from Miami, Florida. Will, you're on the air.
Hi. I went through school, nursing school, in the late 1990s. And we were taught that OxyContin was not a dangerous drug. That figure, less than 1%, was repeated over and over and over. So whenever a patient was in pain, we thought of nothing, giving the patient their due medication without studying the possibility of perhaps, you know, giving them a Tylenol. Yeah. or perhaps, why would you do that if you could take care of someone's pain immediately, you know? So we thought nothing of it.
Hey, Will, can I just ask you a quick question? Sorry to interrupt, but when you were in nursing school, as you were saying, in the late 1990s, did you hear this phrase about pseudo-addiction?
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
But we were told, don't worry about it. It will not happen. It happens to less than 1%. And I personally believed it. You know, if lecturers come and tell you, you know, that less than 1% of your patients are going to become addicted to these drugs, you tend to believe what you're told.
Yeah. Well, Will, thank you so much for your call. And I mentioned pseudo-addiction here because not just in this Massachusetts complaint, but previously we'd heard about allegations that Purdue urged doctors to respond by increasing the opioid dose for certain patients when they showed signs of addiction. That basically there's this notion that patients were suffering from pseudo-addiction. It wasn't real. What they needed was more help and more OxyContin. So Christine Wilmson, let me just bring you back in here into the conversation. You've been very patiently listening. I mean, how do you respond to what our caller Will said or what the Attorney General has been telling us?
Well, one of the things to keep in mind is that it was very deliberate on the Sackler's part to develop schemes that targeted doctors and institutions as well. So this person that was going through nursing school would have heard this statistic of less than 1%. That was probably repeated in a lot of medical institutions throughout the 2000s. And in fact, I mean, they had a very big impact in the Boston area. They gave money to Tufts University. They gave $3 million to Mass General to develop a pain clinic there, all with the idea of making more money and having somebody with a good image, such as Mass General, to promote their drugs.
And to be clear, the Tufts University money went to the founding of a degree program in pain management.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, there's one more part of the complaint here, now that we have the full unredacted complaint, that I want you to just briefly walk us through, Christine. And that is this project that's called Project Tango. What is that? What is Purdue alleged to have considered?
Project Tango is a program or marketing scheme that they developed or were contemplating. It basically, what's happening is publicly Purdue Pharma was saying our drugs are not addictive at all. There's no problem. They're incredibly safe. But internally, through the documents, it's showing that they are addictive. And what they realize is let's profit off of that as well. And so Kath Sackler, she was one of the board members at the time, she devised this secret plan called Project Tango, in which Purdue Pharma actually would provide drugs to help those addicted of their own medications.
End-to-end pain providers,
yes.
They call it, allegedly, yeah. In the document.
And the statistics are pretty staggering, too. Internally, they predicted that up to 60% of the patients that would try this drug, Suboxone, for the first time would actually relapse again, which means more revenue.
Right. So Purdue considered getting into the Suboxone market, the Narcan market as well. Attorney General Healy, though, to be clear, as you say in your complaint, they never actually launched these programs. They didn't get into the pain, the addiction treatment business. They considered it. So why did you put it in the complaint?
Well, I think it's actually very important for a few reasons. First, this is 2014 when Kath Sackler is having some of these conversations. In our complaint, we actually provide excerpts from the actual memo and presentation made to the board in 2014 that does a couple things. One, it acknowledges that the number, the quote market, their words, of people addicted to opioids had, for example, doubled from 2009 to 2014. They knew exactly what was happening out there. It also is an acknowledgement in their own words that opioids and opioid addiction are, quote, naturally linked. Mm. And here was
which they had denied beforehand.
Precisely. And it is a further indication of the mentality of executives and board members and this company to think about not only do you create a market for opioids and lay the groundwork for opioid addiction. Since 2007, 70 million doses of OxyContin in Massachusetts alone. Of opioids, Purdue opioids in Massachusetts alone, 150,000 doctor visits. It cost the state of Massachusetts and its residents $15 billion a year last year alone, this opioid epidemic, a huge problem. But they, at that point, 2014, had devised a way to make money on both ends. Both, you know, on the front end, where a whole bunch of people end up addicted, sick, and dying every day, continuing in this state. And on the back end, let's provide a market for Narcan to reverse overdoses, and for opioid addiction treatment.
Yeah.
That was their marketing material. Why they decided not to go through with it, at that point we'll learn more about. But again, the allegations we make are based on the millions of pages of documents received to date from the company.
Yeah. So again, just to be clear, they did not go through with this plan. They had considered on multiple occasions, though. And I mean, I was quite struck by something that you allege in the complaint, that it was a point in time in which Purdue Pharma internally acknowledged the addictive nature of opioid painkillers. And you quote from from a patient and clinical rationale here, that where Purdue's actually saying this can happen to anyone, this being addiction. From a 50-year-old woman with chronic lower back pain, I'm thinking of our caller Barry here just a second, or Bob, to an 18-year-old boy with sports injury, from the very wealthy to the very poor. Barry Meyer, jump back in here. Project Tango did not go forward, but when you first read about the existence of this this project or this idea, what was your first thought?
Well, my initial thought was better that they sell those drugs, perhaps.
Right.
Or sell those drugs in addition. You know, I think sort of just to comment on the Purdue statement there, you know, mm-hmm. the kind of legal rope-a-dope of we're only responsible for 2% of this. That may be today. I think as the Attorney General pointed out, they wanted to be as responsible for as much opioid use in the medical sector as humanly possible when they launched OxyContin. And I think it's imperative to remember that this company lied. It lied to doctors. It lied to patients. And while there has not been evidence produced to date that the Sacklers signed off on those lies, or that they were necessarily aware of those lies, it's somewhat difficult to conceive of a situation where they were not aware of the material that was being used to promote OxyContin, the illegal actions that were being used to promote OxyContin, because according to the Attorney General's complaint, they were micromanaging the company. So why weren't they micromanaging it back in the early 2000s when the company was flagrantly violating federal law?
Okay, so Attorney General Healey, let me turn back to you on this, because this is something I want to explore with you. As we were mentioning earlier in the hour, in 2007, as you well know, Purdue Pharma reached an agreement with the federal government, with the Department of Justice, for a $630 million settlement about, you know, potential criminal allegations, not only for Purdue Pharma, but individual executives as well. Part of that agreement included a corporate integrity agreement. I mean, Purdue's pointing to this in its own statement in response to your lawsuit. Now, so basically what Purdue is saying is, hey, look, between 2007 to 2012, we as a company had to regularly file reports with the Office of the Inspector General about our business practice, annual reports to a designated monitor. They engage in an independent review that's about specific elements of Purdue's compliance program with the agreement they reached with the federal government. So Purdue here is basically saying they have been closely monitored by government organizations for years now. So it's ludicrous to think that the federal government would miss all that you have allegedly unearthed in your complaint, that there's no bad business practice here. The feds have been watching over them.
Well, I just want to be clear. This isn't an act of fiction. When we put together a complaint, it is based on actual documents, emails, board memos, presentations, marketing materials, and the like. Much of our complaint lays out the story of what happened since that conviction in 2007. And it is what we allege is that it is clear from the documents and the evidence that this company continued its bad practices. The Sackler family was directly involved in sales and marketing efforts and continued to, as was noted, reap $4 billion in revenue from the sale of Purdue opioids after that agreement was signed. So, you know, what is important to me as I sit with and cry with so many families here in Massachusetts affected by this is that the facts come to light and we get justice and accountability. That's something that didn't happen in 2007. This conduct continued, and we will continue to be aggressive in getting to the truth. That's what's important here.
But Attorney General Healey, if I can just press you here for a second. I'm looking at, I mean, the dates are really important here. You, mm-hmm. you lay out clearly in the complaint that you're looking at Purdue's actions in Massachusetts after 2007. And again, Purdue is saying, well, look, between 2007 and 2012, they had been submitting these reports to the Department of Health and Human Services about their business practice, about their sales and business practice. So are you saying that the federal government may have missed something here?
Well, I'm not going to comment on that. And I don't know all of what the federal government was looking at. What I do know is what we've been looking at the last 3 years of our investigation. And what I do know is that Purdue's own documents from 2007-04 lay bare what transpired here in terms of its sales and marketing practices. I mean, at one point in 2012, an internal employee of Purdue got so frustrated with what was happening, with particularly the ongoing incessant direction and control to get these opioid products to market and out there, that the VP of sales sent an email to the then CEO saying, quote, "Anything you can do to reduce the direct control of Richard into the organization is appreciated." I mean, there was so much pressure. There was so much focus on this. And, you know, again, what I think are the benefit of this lawsuit, okay, and this complaint, we've done something that hasn't been done before. And that is to go through and look at all the documentation and to lay out in the complaint, based on Purdue's own words, what it is that happened chronologically here. And it's why we've brought this case.
Mm. Now, Christine Wilmson, let me turn back to you here, because as you've combed through this particular complaint here, there's another part that I know that stood out to you about Purdue's marketing practices, something about cards, or remind me about discount cards that Purdue handed out. Tell us the story briefly.
Yeah, sure. So A.G. Healy makes a good point. In 2007, they agreed to not do certain things, and so they were under the apparently watchful eye of the federal government. But it was almost within months of signing that and paying that fine that they developed this discount card program, which basically allowed people that couldn't afford OxyContin to afford it. And in many respects, there's a lot of pharmaceutical companies that do this. They give you a discount so that you can afford their drug and treat whatever ailment or condition you have. But behind the scenes, allegedly, they were keeping track of the people that were on these cards, understanding that they'd stay on them longer. Like, one of the statistics they had internally was that the savings card, this discount you get on the prescriptions, that savings card led to 60% more people remaining on the drug for longer than 90 days. Mm-hmm. And the significance of that is that, for example, in Massachusetts, the Department of Public Health says anyone that was on OxyContin for longer than 90 days had a 30 times more likely chance of overdosing.
Hmm. Barry Meyer, we've got about a minute and a half left here to go. I'm just wondering, as we move forward, we've got 35 plus states who are trying to take legal action against Purdue, 1,500 cities and counties, at least at last count. Do you think that there's now sort of a critical mass of evidence that might bring the circle of liability closer around the Sacklers as individual members in this bigger story of opioid addiction in the United States?
Well, I think the history of every major litigation over a controversial product, be it tobacco, being asbestos, you know, it always comes to a turning point. It may be decades, it may be years, whatever, where the wall starts to crack and the truth starts to seep out and internal documents become public. And I applaud Attorney General Healy for making these documents public. We are in the midst of a huge public health disaster. Corporations have played a role in creating and allowing this disaster to continue. And I think the history of this disaster, of this tragedy, needs to be written in full. At the end of the day, maybe the Sacklers will turn out to be, you know, bandits. Maybe they'll turn out to be wonderful people who have been miscast.
Yeah.
But we need to know the truth. That's the debt that we owe to all the people whose loved ones died and suffered as a result of this epidemic.
Well, Attorney General Healy, we've got about 30 seconds left. I'll give you the last thought today.
You know, Magna, this is about the truth. This is about the facts. My job as an attorney general is to do the investigation and to bring issues forward that affect the lives of people here in the state. I can't think of an issue that has more deeply touched so many families, not just in Massachusetts, but around this country. And so I encourage people to take a look at our complaint. And I just want families out there to know that we will do everything we can in our power to make sure that there is justice for the loved ones they've lost and for the loved ones who currently suffer from this disease of addiction.
We'll have links to the complaint and Purdue Pharma's statement in response all at onpointradio.org. I just want to thank all of you for joining us today. Attorney General Maura Healy, Christine Wilmson, and Barry Meyer, thank you all. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.